Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, personal power. It is all about you. Sometimes in life, we have to go through lessons that teach us how to grow as people, as individuals. And sometimes those lessons are not too positive, and we may turn to someone for advice and counsel. Sometimes the experts are wise, and sometimes they're not so wise. My guest today, David Bedrick, is a man that has produced a book that I think is really a good read. Why? Because it encourages you to think for yourself. Talking back to Dr. Phil, how many of you are just glued to that television set whenever that show comes on? How many of you feel like whatever he says is gospel? Well, what if we presented you with a different paradigm? What if we could share with you some thoughts that might give you some different options to work with? Are you interested? Well, without further ado, let me welcome David Bedrick, the author of Talking Back to Dr. Phil, Alternatives to Mainstream Psychology. Hi, David.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, it is just delightful. I always enjoy people that take different positionings on things because I think diversity is the spice of life. It also enables us to be aware that there might be more than one way to solve a problem. You have been on the faculty of the University of Phoenix and have taught for the United States Navy, 3M, the American Society of Training and Development, the Process Work Institute, and various psychological associations. You're known for being very, very skilled in mediation and conflict resolution. My goodness, we need that in so many areas of life. How in the world did you get into this arena?
It's a good question. I guess as a youngster, I always had that sort of, why are people acting the way they are? And I guess that was my hunger to learn about psychology. So that's always been in my blood, and studying psychology, I guess, has followed me in my adult career. My organizational work because I became interested in organizations and how the psychology of people doing tasks and rank differences and power issues and things like that happen in organizations. I practiced law for 10 years, and I did mostly custody work, difficult custody cases, because of the psychology around families, but became interested in the Constitution and how power issues and things like that get worked out on that level. So I guess I have the same core, but my hands reach in different areas to see how things work.
I really like that way of thinking. I had to chuckle because in your book, and boy, what really grabbed me right off the top was the listing for the very first section in your book. And it is, Call Me Crazy, Is Psychology Making Us Sick? And I wrote right next to that, yes. I have been in counseling and working with people for so many years. And the themes of thought that vary with every generation always intrigue me. And what I liked about that beginning chapter is that you say we would need to look more past the superficiality of something. It's like observing someone that is very, very obese. What's the core issue here? What is really at the base of this person's desire to consume food with such phenomenal, gusto, but that implies that they are enjoying it. Many times they're not. I think of a man I watched a program on who was 25, I forget how many, he weighed over 1,000 pounds, I think it was. He died. He was massive.
Gosh.
I mean, you just... It's almost beyond comprehension. And nobody really got, when I watched the program on this man, nobody really got to the core issues of what was going on here. And, of course, it killed him. The weight of his body killed him. And I'm just using that. That's an extreme example. But I look at so many things, and I look to my own life. And I think, why did this happen or that happen or the other happen? And then you have to have integrity with yourself. And that's part of what you're addressing here. But I found it fascinating that you took a lot of instances with the television presence of a renowned national celebrity, Dr. Phil, who came into being because of another national celebrity, Oprah Winfrey. But I was so impressed with the fact that you said, let's really get down to the core of something. Mm-hmm. I had a friend, someone very significant in my life, say, I studied psychology, and I found the more I got into psychology, the more that I discovered the people that studied psychology were nuts. It wasn't too long ago that he had a conversation with someone who was a psychologist. And the person looked at him and said, you know what? I agree with you. I just think this is so much fun. Why did you find, in all of your work, you've been an attorney, you've done all of this, why do you think that you took this different bend of direction in thinking?
Well, here's something I've learned from my practice, which has been going on for 20-some-odd years as a therapist, and also, of course, we use ourselves as a person to study. We have to, I guess. We have no choice. And what I've learned is that if you take time to study and listen carefully and deeply to a person's actual experience, you find out amazing things about what's going on or why or what is moving them to do things that don't look so savory to themselves and to other people. But the culture at large promotes, as you were suggesting, something much more simplistic. So let's go to that example of the person who's obese, who's eating large amounts of food that doesn't seem reasonable or logical to most of us, right? Would say, get a grip, right? Most of us, without any psychological training, could say, don't eat so much or exercise more. It doesn't take psychology to say that. It doesn't take training to say that. It takes a certain level of common sense to say that. So we don't need training to do that. A Dr. Phil might say that. What are you thinking? Why are you doing this? Stop it. Let me help you stop. But that doesn't really investigate, as you were implying, what is the person actually doing? So here's an amazing thing. If you take a person who's rather large and eating whatever, let's say I had a client recently who ate containers of Häagen-Dazs ice cream every night, right? Mm-hmm. So you could say, obviously, eating the ice cream was leading to them having a body that they didn't like. They looked in the mirror. They said, I don't like the way I look. I want to stop. They don't stop. So the interesting question is, what are they doing? Well, we might say, why are they doing that? Now, the explanations that people have, if you ask them that, are almost never, ever correct. That person might say, oh, I comfort myself. I self-medicate myself. People basically regurgitate language, pop psychology language that they've heard, whether it's Dr. Phil or in a magazine or somewhere, their friends. Those words not only are not right, they're not helpful. So what can we do? I can say to that person, and here's the trick, or it's not actually a trick, but here's the tip, I guess would be the word. If I say to that person, forget about what you think your reasons are, can you tell me what it is like to eat that ice cream? And that person will say, well, I shouldn't be eating it. And I say, I understand. Tell me what your experience is. Imagine you have a spoon in front of you. I might give them a spoon in an empty bowl or something because I'm not interested in them eating the ice cream, but I do want to understand something that I assume that I do not understand yet. And they might say, here, take your spoon. Imagine you put that vanilla, Tahitian vanilla this person liked, ice cream into your mouth. And then I see a big smile on their face, right? And their eyes light up. I think, aha, they're close to their experience. Put it in your mouth and taste it. And then I see their whole body, kind of their shoulders drop down, and their head goes back just a tiny little bit. And I say, stay in that state. What's it like? And they look up, and they say, you know what? Life is so incredible. what am I doing in the kind of work that I'm doing when life is such a miracle and I'm sitting slaving away at a certain kind of job every day? Well, that's a very different insight than I'm trying to comfort myself. It didn't take very long to get it. Is all it took is someone to, what I call love, love them enough to say, I want to understand what you're doing, assuming that nobody knows. So that person is not looking for comfort. They're looking for a new perspective about life, and then maybe some life changes would occur. And that diet program might not be stopping, trying to get them to stop eating ice cream. It might mean looking at their work differently, maybe eventually changing it. Then the ice cream might melt away, as it were, all by itself.
Mm-hmm. I think many times, and I'll share something about myself. I know that there have been times in my life where I would find I was doing something and I would set a goal. This is a real big thing. People set goals. We're going to set goals. We're going to reach goals. And I'd set a goal, and as soon as I set that goal, I would sabotage myself.
Beautiful. I would find,
you know, I might say, I am not going to have that Snickers bar. I am never going to eat another Snickers bar as long as I live because I've got this goal in front of me. Now, we're using food as an example. This could be with anything. And
yes.
By golly, I guarantee you, within a week, a Snickers bar would be not only passing my lips, but I'd be licking my lips and going, oh, boy, that's really good. I don't think I'm going to make this goal. And I had to really take a backward step and ask myself, why? Why is it that I am doing this? Well, society and so many things, so many applications of thought, set your goals, you're going to reach them. But many times we are doing stuff that other people, just as you mentioned earlier, it's their paradigms. It's not ours. And I really like what you have just said. It's bringing an awareness, a perception of choice, an awareness of really what's going on. And I think that's so consistent. It is just so... why is it that it's very hard for people to make this okay? I have never known an effective counselor that hasn't been willing to listen. I've never known an effective counselor that hasn't been willing to listen. Why do we want things in boxes? Why is it so hard for us to step outside of these boxes?
It's a great question. I have thoughts about that, but it's definitely true. We get ideas about things, and maybe they work for a while even. I say, oh my gosh, I found a new diet, or I found a new way to address my family who hurts my feelings, and for that moment, the excitement of it, maybe the relief of it, maybe how great it was for me to find that solution, we become a little bit fundamentalist about that idea. This is the answer. This is the way. And I guess it's somewhat natural then for folks to, when they find that, to want to share it, maybe overshare it, push people, proselytize, or try to convert them to their method. And that may work for a while. Maybe it's going to work for their whole life. Often it doesn't, but things change. But I got to tell you, Donna, you reminded me of another diet story of a woman who came to see me who had been off and on diet programs for many years of her life, like many folks have been. I said, how do you try to diet? And she said, I try to discipline myself. I try to drink water instead of eat food at a certain amount per day, and I bring salads to my job. And she had a whole structure of things so that she wouldn't do things. She wouldn't eat the things she thought she shouldn't. And I said to her, okay, I'm going to put you on the diet program that you suggest sitting here. And I want you to respond. And I said, okay. She said, okay. I said, you have to eat salads. You have to drink more water. You know, I kind of gave her this regimen, which she had presented to me. And she smiled and she said, as soon as you say that, I want to do something different. I want to eat chocolate. And I said, chocolate? She goes, I don't even like chocolate. So I said to her, well, let's keep playing with this dialogue. I said, you can't eat chocolate. You have to eat lettuce, you know, whatever, carrots and lettuce or something. And she said, I don't want to do what you have to say. And I said, great, I'm going to put you in a box, speaking of boxes, and this is the way to be. And she said, if you put me in a box, I'm going to break out of that box. And I said, well, why would you do that? And she said, it feels good to say no to you. And I said, say no? Tell me about saying no. And she said, I'm a single mom. I have two kids. I have a job that I can't afford to lose. She said, I don't get to say no to anybody. So Think about this. She had developed this unconscious diet program that created a set of rules that she got to say no to. You know, I know it doesn't seem intelligent to many people. It seems like what a crazy way to do it. But there's an intelligence built into that system. She's practicing saying no to something. Now, should she do that the way she's doing it with food? No. We could find other ways for her to say no to certain things. That was her diet program became saying no to her kids certain times, taking more time for herself, standing up for herself a little bit more at work. Nothing to do with food. Nothing to do with exercise. Saying no was the intelligence built into her diet system, but unknown.
I really like that point. I think that so many times as human beings, and I think of a very, very dear friend that I just love dearly, and we'll use the diet situation, and she has basically battled with her weight all of her life. She and I have known each other since we were 17. And I know when I saw her just recently, and she commented about how she had expanded in her size. And I looked at her, and all I could see was pain. And she has so many things she's dealing with in life. And just what you said triggered memories of association with members of the family. She always has been the caretaker. She has always been the one that cannot truly say no. She didn't know how to say no. And I can remember a point in our association where she said, I envy you because you have the courage to walk away from something, and I don't. I do not know how to do that. She didn't know how to say no. And I look at her, and your story is so poignant to me because I love this individual dearly. And I understand where her thinking is, but I don't think she understands how her whole life has been encompassed with you're not allowed, you're not given permission to do this. So the food has been not something she's really enjoyed, but it has been like a pacifier, and perhaps that's not the correct word. But so many times people will even have physical ailments because of their acquiescing to environments that they just detest. And they end up getting ill and having all kinds of problems, and to shift their mentality means that they have to wake up. And your way of thinking is, I think, very refreshing. It is, let's look at the core. Let's really look at what's eating you. That's a favorite statement of the old kahunas that they used to ask people when they'd come to them ill or having problems. What is eating at you? And I was thinking of that when I was going through your book, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is so poignant, because it's a very individual something that any one of us will go through. Why is someone an alcoholic? Why is someone compulsive with video games? Why is something going on where they're mad, they're angry, and they're out blowing themselves up? Maybe you may not be able to ask them any questions, of course, when they do that. But it's what's at the core? What's at the core? And not just labeling people, kids with what's diagnosed as ADHD. I'd say 90% of them are not with that problem. What's going on? It seems like there is this psychological put in the box description, and you're stuck with it. And it just agitates the heck out of me. And again, that's why I enjoyed your book, Talking Back to Dr. Phil. And that's something, I know that when you're on TV, you're supposed to be able to solve everything. Well, my goodness, you can't. You can't solve something in 30 seconds or less. It does not work because you've got this tapestry. of emotion, experience, paradigms of thinking. I think it's fascinating, but it probably would take a good, you know, at least a whole day to invest in that person to really listen to them, and it's not going to happen in 40 minutes.
Yeah, you said so many things that are interesting. The idea of labeling that you bring up happens certainly in psychology has labels for better at times, but and often for worse, mm-hmm. depending on the usefulness of it. But we practice psychology on ourselves the same way. I taught for many years, and I had a student who came to me, looked tired, and I said, "How are you doing?" And he said, "I was up all night writing the paper." And I said, and he said, "I know I should start earlier and stretch it out so I can do a little bit at a time. And I'm a procrastinator. I'm reading books on procrastination. I'm going to get some help about procrastination, and I'm going to change that." So he has practiced a certain kind of psychology. He has a problem. He thinks, right? He's disturbed. He's not comfortable or happy with himself around mm-hmm. this writing and being tired. And he diagnosed himself and labeled himself, "I am a procrastinator." So the question is, so that sounds very appealing, and most people would say, "Oh, okay, great. Here's the procrastination workbook, right? You know, fill this out and call me in the morning," or however you would say it.
And, yes.
So I said to him, tell me what it's like. So now I'm just doing what you say, listening. I'm just now, rather than accept the diagnosis and try to treat him for procrastination, so to speak, I just say, "Tell me about staying up all night and writing the paper." And he says, "Oh, I researched this, and then I Googled that, and I edited the paper, and I rewrote it, and I had this new idea." And he describes this incredible amount of energy and passion and intelligence and focus.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, tiredness is not great, but what's happening there is quite alive. And I say, "Did you ever try to stretch it out?" And he goes, "Well, I tried to. It often doesn't work. You know, I don't get really interested. I don't really get very focused that way." And I say, "Tell me about your best performances in life, whether that's in sports or in interaction with someone." This person is a very intense, focused, passionate person. In a way, his psyche has found a way for him to be at his best. If you stretch him out and say, "Do a little bit at a time," it doesn't bring out the best in him. In somebody mm-hmm. else it might, but in him, so you could say, even though in his mind, his beliefs say, "I should stretch things out and take my time," the truth is this person does things in a very passionate, focused, intense way, better off being blocking off 8 hours than having 2 hours over four periods of time. Not everybody is like that. So I think, incredible. So now, does he have to do that at night? We can start talking about that. But without me asking a few questions, I don't realize that what he's calling procrastination is a way that his system is creating an opportunity for him to be at his most intense and passionate best. How fascinating that his psyche figures out a way to put him in the exact spot. But there's another thing that I wanted to... can I say one more thing?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. I was thinking about how powerful the forces are that make it difficult for us to do certain things. You were talking about this friend of yours and how she would, I don't know if you used the word compliant, but that she went along with things and didn't resist or say no
mm-hmm.
to things, and how you saw that. And it made me think, Donna, about how powerful the forces are that could make it difficult for some people. That
mm-hmm.
one would say, "Well, just speak up." For some people, that instruction would be plenty, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But for some people, depending on their background, on their family background, on their cultural background, that could be very, very difficult to do. And I was thinking about a woman that I worked with who also had a very difficult time speaking up and saying, you know, "No, I'd rather do this," or to change the direction that people would try to take her, or even I would be suggesting. And one day she was sitting there, and I noticed she'd never drank water. And I said, "Do you not drink water because you would have to use the bathroom?" And she said, "That's right. I don't want to have to use the bathroom." I said, "How come?" She said, "Well, then I'd have to interrupt you." She didn't say, "Then I'd lose my time." "Then I'd have to interrupt you." And I said, "What's wrong with saying, excuse me, David, can we take a couple of minutes? I'd like to use the bathroom. And she, I could see her body begin to recoil.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a horrifying idea. And I said, do you have to use the bathroom right now? And she said, well, not really. Can you hear that? Not
yes,
really
I
means
can hear
a little
that.
Bit, but I don't want to say it, right?
That's
and I
right.
said, could you, why don't you, I said, if you were free, what would you do about it? It took about 15 minutes for her to be able to say, I would like to take a break and use the bathroom. Now, somebody mm-hmm. might say, that seems crazy. But what I know about that, Donna, is the forces that hold people into patterns, in that case, not peeing, maybe not seem big to somebody else, although it relates to many things, but patterns of using substances or eating or relating to certain people in certain ways, those patterns are so darn powerful that we need to have a very high and profound respect for their power. Not that we have to agree, but
mm-hmm.
we have to recognize this is not a simple thing that this person's up against. They're up against a force that is rather immovable, and it's going to take some time or ingenuity or personal power or something to break through that barrier.
You have a section that I was very impressed with, dealing with anger. And, of course, the news media today is just going ballistic over this former police officer who has murdered people, and there's a level of anger, and we're not going to go into that. But this is an example, an extreme example of someone who is saying, I've got nothing to lose, I'm going to do what I want to do, and it's going to be on my terms, and they go out and create havoc. And this, we've heard a lot about this in the past couple of years. And we look at this, and I can remember many years ago telling a friend that when she had anger, I said, you need to honor and respect it because it's an emotion that actually is like a two-edged sword, and it can work for you and leverage you to make changes, or it can work against you, causing harm to yourself, perhaps, and or to others. So what would you prefer? Well, what this person would do, and a lot of it had to do with her cultural background, which was Middle Eastern, she'd suppress it. And she ended up with a lot of challenges, deep resentment. And I watched her, and I can remember when I was around her how sad I felt for her, because this was a phenomenally beautiful human being. And I thought, this is not good. And I had someone challenge me about fear being a two-edged sword, but it really is. Let's address that for a moment, because you have some wonderful thoughts about working with anger in your book.
Yeah, I'm right with you in your notion and idea about suppression. Many folks just think of anger as something that they'd rather not have. Well, that's not surprising. It's not usually pleasant, and it usually doesn't create very wonderful interactions around one. So without any psychological training, we could easily say, wouldn't it be better if you didn't have that? Dr. Phil could say that. Is that working for you? No, mm-hmm. it feels lousy. I hurt people. Well, don't do it. So anybody can say that, but the psychological question is what you're saying. What's the core? Where is this emanating from, and can we do something with that? And even deeper, is there anything intelligent inside the system that maybe is not manifesting in the best way that anger is about? So most people then, what they try to do, along with the pop psychology ideas, they label themselves as having an anger problem, and what they try to do with anger, because anger has a certain force to it, is suppress that force, to keep that force down. So now you have something akin to a pot that's boiling, let's say that's anger, and a lid that holds it in, that suppresses it. And most people think, what I need to do is make a tighter lid, and that way I won't explode. And that way I won't say nasty things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I can maybe mm-hmm. lower the flame so that I don't have that heat. So I can go out and take a walk or deep breathe or something like that so as to get rid of that boiling pot of anger.
Mm-hmm.
If that works for people, amen, great. But people who describe themselves as having anger problems usually don't need to lower that flame and don't need a tighter lid. They need to know something more about that boiling liquid, that heat that is in them, that they don't know what to do with. To the extent that they try to suppress it, it then gets held in longer, and then it blows, right? So we try to make a meeting five times, and I never say anything the first four times that you're 20 minutes late, so because I'm holding my lid. And the fifth time, I go, rah, woof, 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 right? Now I'm going to speak up. And you're like, hey, it was only 10 minutes. What's the big deal, right? Well, I have a four 20-minute period and a 10-minute. I have 90 minutes built into me, right? And at that point, you're going to get a 90-minute blast. And then I think, whoa, I have an anger problem. I should hold myself back. But the truth is, I needed to use a little bit of that heat the first time. Hey, Donna, is this going to be a regular thing? 20 minutes didn't work for me. Whatever. I need to, a little blast might build a relationship with you. So the question is then, how do I make a lid that's intelligent so that I'm letting it out at proper times and not just letting that boiling thing happen? I think of people who describe themselves as having bad tempers, right? That usually means that they hold something back and then blow. So if we actually say to them, can you feel that heat, that boiling, that hot, what you're calling anger inside of you? Let's take the label even anger away. Can you feel some of that heat? Yes, I can. I'd say, show it to me in your hands. And that person might make fists, let's say. And I'd say, great, feel those fists in your hands, feel them in your shoulders, feel them in your body. Let yourself be one big fist for the next 20, 30 seconds so I can see it. And then they might make their body muscular and tight. And they say, it's too tight. I say, I understand. Just stay with the tightness a little longer until you understand it before we get rid of it. And that person could get tight, and they could look at me with a certain glare in their eye. And I say, great, keep glaring at me. What would you say to me from that glare? And they say, why should I trust you? I think, how wonderful. That's a person who might trust people all the time, regardless of who they are. And now they're saying, why should I trust you? Tell me more. Well, I have questions I want to ask you before I continue doing therapy with you. I think this is a great step. That person may never question people. So all of that heat turns out to be a capacity to challenge people, maybe challenge authorities. I think, amen, we found something that's intelligent about that boiling stuff other than suppressing it.
Well, I'll tell you, David, I think that your book is really refreshing. I think that it can enable people to realize, one, they can challenge authority. Now, they don't need to go out with an M16 to do it. They can learn. I mean, I'm just sometimes amazed at what we as human beings decide we need to do. But I really think that's what makes the human character so fascinating, because one size doesn't fit all. We can generalize. We can use our words, but the language of communication is very important. And I think the language of your communication in your book, Talking Back to Dr. Phil, Alternatives to Mainstream Psychology, is a very, very good publication. And your website, Talking Back to Dr. Phil, and Dr. is D-R, talkingbacktodrphil.com, is a place that I think people would enjoy visiting. Your perspectives are outstanding, and I say refreshing, because it really is something that we need to be aware that as human beings, we're not a label. We're human beings, and we've got a lot of stuff in us. And exploring that, becoming what our greatness really is, however that may be expressed through us, is part of our journey. And I think your book goes a long way to helping people with that. I want to thank you for being my guest. For those of you listening, we're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. Check out talkingbacktodrphil.com. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it. Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you have been able to join me today. Quickly, I want to give out our toll-free number. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Our lineup this week is a real interesting one. Of course, Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about opening up your heart to love. That's right. Eli Chiaviello is going to be my guest tomorrow. Lester Savage wrote this book, and he's a physician, and he's 85 years young. He's not going to be available for the interview, but Eli was profoundly affected by this physician's attitude about love. So I feel it was very appropriate to have that for Valentine's Day. And we are going to also be talking about energy massage on Friday. Someone here in the Pacific Northwest, his name is Steve Hanna. Steve Hanna has been working with massage for a number of years, and he's found a direct relationship to keeping people from having health problems because of knowing how to use massage, energy massage, and then also how you can do something if you have a stroke or whatever, how massage is just absolutely marvelous for that. So we've got two delightful guests this week. And, of course, if you want more information about the upcoming personalities that are going to be with me on the air, all you have to do is touch the show information button, and you'll find a little brief write-up on each one of my guests. And for those of you in Seattle, Washington, I want to remind you it is just a short period away, 2 weeks, that's all. Northwest Women's Show is going to be happening. And I have a booth there, booth number 405. But this event I've participated in for so many years now, I absolutely love it. Ladies, put it on your calendar. It's March 1, 2, and 3. What a way to greet spring. What a way to gift yourself for a makeover in one way or another, exploring all kinds of wonderful, wonderful booths, food, you name it. We've got it. We even have dancing firemen. I'm not lying. I'm not exaggerating. Check out their website, northwestwomenshow.com, northwestwomenshow.com, and also stop by my booth because we love to interact. I'm going to be doing many consultations, and I'm going to have scads of books and CDs that you will be able to look at and maybe even take home with you if you so desire. So again, keep in mind, March 1, 2, and 3, the Pacific Northwest Women's Show, an annual event you don't want to miss. Hey guys, you can come too. Be prepared though, wear comfortable shoes because those ladies are going to make you walk. Woo-hoo! You're going to be very tired by the end of the day when you accompany your lady to this event. Oh, and I have a women's forum, too. I'll tell you more about that later. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. Now, because we had callers yesterday, I wasn't able to finish a story that I had started out with. For those of you that were listening yesterday, you know I had on Marcia Reese, and we were talking about the marriage mouse. Relationships are so important to us. And so many times we've gone through some ugly situations, and we want to have something better. Well, I'd started telling the story yesterday, and you may or may not have heard it, so let me tell. This is a true story. It's about a chaplain at a college. This is a very wise man. And one day, a young lady comes in. She happened to be a junior in the college program there, and she flops down in the chair that's in front of his desk, and he sort of looks at her over his glasses because he was working on reports, and he said, oh, do you have a problem today? Because his door was always open to anybody who wanted to visit with him. She said, yes. And he goes, oh. So he gets up, goes and closes the door, and comes back over and sits with her, and said, all right, what's on your mind? And she said, I've had it. I have been dating all of these different guys, and they are just so immature. They are just jerks. I am so tired of being with these guys that just don't have a grip on life. And he was sitting there listening. He didn't make any comments. And he said, well, why are you here? Why are you wanting to talk to me? And she said, well, I really want to be married. I want to know how I can attract to myself Mr. Wonderful. Well, he paused for a moment, and he had been writing something, and he stopped, and he looked at her, and he asked her a question. Do you think you're ready for marriage? Automatically, she said yes. Then he asked her another question. Do you think you'd be a good wife? And she looked at him. She had thought about it. She said, what do you mean? He said, well, being a companion to someone, taking personal responsibility, you're typically, the woman is in charge of the home. You know, how would you feel about being in a different role where you have a partner that you work with? And he, you know, did this kind of a discourse with her. And she thought about it for a moment, and she said, yes, I am ready to make that kind of a commitment. He said, okay, this is what I want you to do. He said, I want you to go back to the dorm, and I want you to have some quiet time, and I want you to have 4 sheets of paper, and at the top of one, I want you to put mental, at the top of the other, I want you to put emotional, at the top of the other, I want you to put physical, and then I want you to put spiritual on number 4 page. And she just sort of looked at him a little bit perplexed. And he said, I want you to take the time to write down the qualities of the person that you would like to have as a partner. And she said, what? He said, I want you to do this. And once you finish it, then I want you to call and make an appointment with me so we can discuss things. She said, that's it? He said, that's it. That's your homework assignment. You go ahead and you do it. So she said, okay. It was about, maybe about 2 weeks later, she calls him back. And in calling him back to make an appointment, there was a time slot that was conveniently available, so she came in. Well, she had done her homework. She listed the qualities of character that she was interested in, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And what he did was spend the time going over her list with her. And he discussed different things with her, and there were some things that she decided to change. And he said, all right, now this is what I want you to do. I want you to take this list, and I want you to put it in an envelope. And I want you to, once or twice a month, I want you to read through this list. I want you to continue your dating. I want you to just enjoy your social life, but I want you to read your list about the qualities that you really want in a spouse. She said, okay. She said, why in the world am I doing this? He said, I want you to trust me. Just do what I ask you to do. Don't worry about it, but just trust me. So after all the adjustments that they had made, and she had her list in place, and he said, if at any time you feel you need to change something on the list, then change it. She said, okay. Well, the semester went by, and a year went by, and as a senior, she comes in, and she bounces into his office one day, and she's just grinning from ear to ear. Well, it took him a moment to remember her, because it had been almost a year and a half. She was getting ready to graduate. It was almost a year and a half since he had seen her. Well, he wasn't busy, and he said, well, what's up? And she extended her hand out in front of his face, and there was a beautiful engagement ring on her finger. And she was just beaming, just beaming. He said, ah. So you found Mr. Wonderful. Why don't you sit down and tell me the story? Well, what evolved with this young lady is that she was disciplined enough to continue to do what he had suggested. she would read her list, and she would just feel like, no, this can't happen. There's just nobody on this planet that's going to meet the qualities of character and person that I want. And so what happened is that she kept dating and going out and still was encountering these misdirected males, I would say, that just didn't have the qualities that she wanted. Well, as it turned out, she was on a date with one of these males, and they had gone to a concert on campus. They had gotten there early. And what happened is that they were sitting and having a cup of coffee, and the concert was going to be in a couple of hours, but they knew the parking was going to be very difficult, so they decided they'd do that. And so to be sure they have a parking spot. Well, while they were sitting there having coffee, this stranger walks up to the table. He's carrying an instrument, and he introduces himself. He said, "You must excuse me, I'm lost. I just can't find my way to the concert auditorium." So this young lady and her friend said, "Oh, we can take you there. We'll do this." Well, to make a long story short, they had conversation, goes to the concert. This young man performs in the concert. Afterwards, they go backstage to talk with him. Well, they ended up interacting, and that young musician, a man she never dreamed in a million years she could possibly meet, met the requirements of the list that she had made. The universe had brought to her someone from an environment she never had any association with, and her life was rich and full. So I share that lesson with you. Think about it. Have you made your list? You might want to do it. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. I've got to share a cheesecake recipe with you. I am a cheesecake fan. I just love it. And I know in the past I've shared something with chocolate. Well, Valentine's Day is tomorrow. What if you wanted to fix a yummy goodie? Oh, excuse me. By the way, you can give me a buzz if you want. 888-627-6008 if you'd like for me to light up your life. Now, this is a strawberry swirl cheesecake. Now, of course, you want to be sure you've got a lot of neighbors that you're going to be able to share this with, or whoever, if you're going to have a party. This is it's beautiful in its presentation. It's pink and white. It's just absolutely fabulous. And, of course, you can add chocolate, too, if you want. But, really, it's fun to do something that you've never done before. And I just really liked this idea. And if you don't have a heart-shaped pan, don't worry about it. You can figure something out, put a heart formation on it with whipped cream if you wanted to. But this is what you're going to need. You're going to need a 9x3 round springform pan, or if you have one that's a heart-shaped springform pan, that's optimum. But if you don't, that's okay, too. You're going to need to get your oven to 325 degrees. You want to position the rack in the oven in the middle so that the heat is going to distribute evenly. Now, the outside of the pan, you're going to wrap it with heavy-duty foil. And then these are the ingredients. You're going to need 46 vanilla wafer cookies, 46 vanilla wafer cookies, a half a cup of sliced almonds, a quarter of a cup of butter, and that will need to be melted. A quarter of a teaspoon of almond extract, a quarter of a cup of strawberry preserves. If you want to use low sugar, you can. Why? I mean, preserves are preserves. Use the real stuff, as far as I'm concerned. You need 4 packages, 8-ounce packages of cream cheese. Those should be at room temperature. You need 1 2/3 cups plus 3 tablespoons of sugar. Super fine sugar is the best, as far as I'm concerned, when you're making a cheesecake. But regular sugar, that's fine. 1 2/3 cups plus 3 tablespoons of sugar. 5 eggs, room temperature, remember. 1 8-ounce container of sour cream. You're going to need 2.5 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 tablespoon of strawberry extract, and 5 drops of red liquid food coloring. And if you don't want to use that, you can omit it. You're going to need 1.5 cups of heavy cream. Do not use the fat-free. Use the real stuff. That's what makes cheesecake so magnificently wonderful. And if you have some chocolate heart-shaped candies or something like this, when it comes to decorating this thing, you could do whatever you want with it. Now, this is what you're going to need. In a plastic bag, food storage bag, you want to crush your cookies because you're going to have about 1.5 cups of vanilla cookie crumbs. You want to mix your crumbs, your melted butter, your almonds, and almond extract together. And this is going to be your crust. You're going to press it into the bottom of your pan. Now, then you're going to bake it at 325 until it's lightly brown. You're going to remove it from the oven. Now, for this, you're also going to need a deep roasting pan. Why? Because you're going to be using a water bath for the baking of this cheesecake. Now, get out your blender. You want to puree your preserves until they're smooth as silk. Put that to the side. And then on medium speed, you want to beat your cream cheese. Remember, this is at room temperature, and 1 2/3 cup of sugar until it's smooth. Electric mixer, that's what you want to use. Once that is totally blended, add in your eggs, your sour cream, cornstarch, and your vanilla. You just let the mixer do the work. It's going to beat it until it is silky smooth. You're going to take 1 cup of that batter, put it in a separate bowl. You want to put in your food coloring and the strawberry preserves, and then your other amount of batter, you're going to just pour right in over the crust, obviously. And then you take your spoonfuls of your strawberry-colored batter, and put it over the batter that's already in the pan, dropping it in little blobs. And then take a knife, or even a toothpick if you want, and create a swirl. And then you're going to carefully put your pan in your water-filled roasting pan. You want the water to come halfway up that cheesecake pan. You bake it for 1 hour and 25 minutes, and you want to bake it. You want to be aware, you want that cheesecake so it's still just slightly jiggling in the middle. Turn off your oven. Let the cheesecake stand in the roasting pan in the water bath for 1 hour and 40 minutes, even 2 hours. Just leave it alone because it's going to continue to bake. Once it's done that, you're going to take the cake out of the water, run your knife around the edge of the cake pan's edge to loosen it, cool it on the rack. You just let it sit out on your counter, let it cool. Refrigerate it overnight, and you don't remove the sides of the pan until the next day. So this is a great day to do it, or if you're going to have a party of some kind. It's good to know that you've got to refrigerate this overnight. And then you can take whatever cream you have there, put in your 3 tablespoons of sugar. You want to beat that heavy cream until it forms peaks, and then put it in a plastic bag or even a pastry bag if you want that has a special tip on it. And you can just make a heart design with the whipped cream, garnish the cake with it, and do whatever else you want. It's a fabulous dessert. It is going to look beautiful. Now, if you really wanted to add something special, if you didn't want to use the whipped cream, just take strawberry preserves. You could put a layer of your strawberry preserves right over the top. And if your strawberry preserves are a little watery, let them sit in a strainer for a while and the moisture will level down, come down, and separate, and you'll have a nice thick consistency to put on top. And then you can decorate that with whipped cream. Use your imagination. It's so much fun, but it's pretty, very pretty, just beautiful to present, and it's good too. Cup of coffee, tea with that, and sharing it with those that you love. What a wonderful way to spend a Valentine's Day. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. Join me, won't you? Because we're going to be talking about how to open your heart to love tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're in charge of your destiny. You're in charge of who you are as an individual. Accept that. Rejoice in it. Be glad you're the person you are. And I'm so delighted you're sharing your time with me. Thank you. We'll talk again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.